Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time to take you behind the scenes in Smash Mouth.
Yoshi slides it in, and the Predators win it overtime.
This is the Preds official podcast with Thomas Willis and Brooks Bratton. Brought to you by Two Rivers Ford, home of the non-commissioned salespeople on Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Oh, hey there. It's the Preds official podcast presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game and streaming right now on the Game Nashville app. For more about the show, NashvillePredators.com/podcast. For my co-host Brooks, I'm Thomas. Producer Bax brings down the music on episode 128 of the POP, the post-trade deadline edition, as we now are officially in the stretch run of the 2021 NHL season with your Nashville Predators in playoff position, fighting to make it for the seventh consecutive season. We'll see if they're able to do it. A big week, some big wins over the Dallas Stars and Tampa Bay Lightning. They recently fall to the Carolina Hurricanes, potentially a future first-round opponent if especially Nashville is able to make it into that 1-4 matchup. But Brooks, the trade deadline passed on Monday. We, for months, have asked, will A happen? Will the Preds be buyers? Will B happen? Will they be sellers? I had proposed option C for a while. We now have since learned there may have been option D, which was not only don't trade Mikael Granlund, but look to pursue and re-sign him in the offseason. But I think, in short, the Predators went with A.
Well, speaking of things that we didn't know was going to happen or things that have never happened, 128 episodes, we've never recorded a podcast at 11 o'clock at night, but here we are.
I wondered if you're going to bring that up. Yes, if you're listening on the radio, it's a bright and beautiful Saturday morning, most likely. If you're in your podcast feed, I mean, it's on demand. You can listen whenever you like. But yes, we did go after the qualifying round, the play-in series ended after a game. That was somewhat late, but it certainly wasn't 11 o'clock Eastern for you and 10 p.m. Central for me. So Preds podcast after dark. We'll see how this episode comes out.
We have a coworker who has often suggested POP after dark.
Here
well,
we are.
Here it is. I don't know that it's going to be quite as scandalous as he may have hoped for.
Right.
But at least we're recording it late. Yeah, it's late here. I'm in Raleigh at the team hotel after the Predators played the Hurricanes on Thursday night. But Thomas, as you said, lots to talk about. Not a lot happened for the Predators at the trade deadline, but that still brings about lots of things to talk about. It is worth mentioning, and we've got so much to touch on with the trade deadline, it is worth mentioning that the Predators, that first game after the trade deadline, beat the Tampa Bay Lightning by a 7-2 final, then come to Carolina here tonight as we record late on April the 15th. They fall 4-1 to the Carolina Hurricanes. Not the best effort, not the worst effort of all time, but only four losses in their last 17 outings, which is still pretty darn good. And because of that stretch, that really led to the inactivity from David Poile on Monday's trade deadline.
We heard from the Nashville GM that he didn't want to sell. He wanted to have some belief. He wanted to have a reason to keep this group together. And you'll see it more from a buyer's perspective. You'll hear phrases tossed around like, you know, even if this team is ahead of schedule in a rebuild, or they competed, or they're higher up in the standings than maybe their GM or coach thought, you'll hear, you know, analysts or others say they deserve a chance to go for it. They deserve, you know, some extra pieces. They deserve the opportunity to stick together. And GM Poile saying several times that the team chemistry, where they've rebounded to be in the standings, the fact that they've been able to do it with all these young players and play better as a team, that he felt like they deserved a chance. And I think, as we said last week prior to the deadline, we'll never know exactly what was offered for some of the pieces on the Predators roster, specifically some of their UFAs like Granlund and Halla and others. But it became, I'd say pretty apparent 3 weeks ago that you would think, like a Matthias Ekholm, for example, with another year on his deal, he was not going to be moved from the Nashville Predators. But you still wondered, even dependent up until the very last days of the deadline, would it still make more sense to potentially say, let's go ahead and recoup something for some of these assets? And as I said earlier, I think with Granlund specifically, that narrative has very much changed, especially with Philip Forsberg out of the lineup right now. Maybe even if you're bullish you want to toss Ellie Tolvin into that group as well. But Kyle Granlund might be the Predators' best forward on the ice, on at least most nights. And so I think this has been his best season with Nashville for sure. You know, some ups and downs, especially after he was acquired in 2019 for the rest of that season. But, you know, okay, a little bit better under Coach Hines last season. And then, like I said, his best one yet with the Predators, at least so far. So now all of a sudden, you not only don't want to trade him away, you want him for this stretch run and maybe even for future seasons to come as well. So on that topic, Poile has also said on this station recently that, you know, he'll want to sign Matthias Ekholm long term, if at all possible, if that relationship makes sense to continue. And the same with Philip Forsberg as well. So sorry, specifically Canadian teams, it feels like you won't be getting two of the Predators' best players. Those are two Swedish pieces that they'll want to build around, you know, for years to come, it would appear. So, I think technically, I joke a little bit earlier saying, you know, A happens and then that the Predators were buyers at the deadline, but technically they were. It, of course, was more about standing pat and not making, you know, selling moves or large buying moves, but they are technically buyers because, and we also made this joke in weeks past as well, another warm body would just be nice, especially on defense. That's kind of what the Predators went for. So they acquire Eric Gudbranson from the Ottawa Senators. This is a fun fact if you haven't heard this yet. Drafted the pick before Ryan Johansson, so third overall years ago. He's been with the Senators, has worn an A with them in recent seasons, and he is a right-shooting defenseman. I think if everyone's healthy, the Predators probably don't make that move. But, I mean, I think we've learned that they may never be healthy, and they certainly aren't right now. So looks like he'll be an option for Coach Hines. Coach Hines said this week that he thinks the penalty kill in particular would be something that Gudbranson can help Nashville with. But I think they're just looking for another large body. That he's, you know, 6'5 and quite large. Just another option, you know, to have somebody healthy on defense. So has not debuted yet for the Predators. By the time you are listening to this, he may have, though. The hope would be, again, coming from Canada to the United States and then joining with the team. Maybe as soon as this weekend, maybe it waits till next week when the Predators play three times against the Blackhawks. But they'll want to, you know, give him a shot as soon as they can. But due to the extra restrictions that were under this season, it's just taking a little bit longer to see him debut. But yeah, like I said, almost humorous. I think certainly the right call to largely stand pat, but to technically call the Preds buyers after all the talk that we've had in the weeks past, it's a bit funny.
Yeah, as well, we like to keep things light and cheery here on the POP, but no, like as David Poile has said too, I mean, it's kind of, you didn't necessarily expect to be in this position a month ago. I mean, he had mentioned that it's the way that he feels about this team today compared to the first month of the season is simply just night and day. And I think that's the feeling for a lot of people. And, you know, things weren't going well. And when you're a team like Nashville, that could potentially have a lot of assets, of course, the rumors are going to start flying. But then slowly but surely, things started to turn around to the point where the Predators were 10 points out of a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, they are, it's going to be a grind the rest of the way. It's going to be tough to get into the playoffs. Nothing's guaranteed. Poile said that as well, but they're certainly in a position to make the postseason now. And that just simply wasn't the case a month or so ago. By the way, before we get too far into this segment, Tanner Jeannot,
yeah,
who we're going to talk to a bit, he had his first NHL goal in that 7-2 win against Tampa and has kind of established himself as a folk hero already, laying hit after hit after hit. The likes of which haven't been seen in a little while. So excited to talk to him coming up. But yeah, as you said, a buyer, if you want to call the Predators that, as they acquire Eric and Branson. But we wanted to hear from David Poile as well. He had a lot to say on Monday afternoon once the 2 p.m. Central deadline passed, but not a single player was dealt off of the active roster, a decision that came as a surprise to some. But here is what Poile had to say on keeping his team together.
Well, I think the trade deadline was certainly different for us because our record was so poor and it appeared that we were out of it. You know, there was probably more talk by me and other teams engaging in talk with us earlier than normal. I would say a normal trading deadline is in the last week for almost every club. So I guess you could say I had the luxury of, you know, talking to a lot more teams and just finding out different values of our team. I think it's always good to talk about your players, other players, just to see what their value is. And again, it certainly changed game by game. I just felt all along that we were a better team than we had displayed at the beginning of the season. There were so many factors that went into why we didn't play well. Some that we wish we could have changed, but didn't. The good news is that a lot of these things are coming together. I know we have a long way to go in terms of, to just making the playoffs. But I feel we've kind of been in the playoffs for the last several games, and I think these last 13 games is the playoffs right now for our team. And again, for a lot of these young players that we brought in that are making such a good contribution to our hockey club. So, it's good. I'm glad we were a buyer today versus a seller. I think that's always a good sign for your franchise in terms of your belief. I think that clearly shows that you believe in the players. I think it's a reward for the players, the coaches, the fans, that you didn't trade anybody away and that you actually added to your team. And, it's been really good and exciting the last 3 weeks, and let's hope it continues that way.
Later on, Poile was also asked specifically why, did he choose not to sell? I thought this was interesting. He said, quote, "In my heart, I was not open to selling because I believed in this team and wanted to give them a chance. But as a manager, I was taking calls and was listening because I think that's free, and why wouldn't I? But I pretty well made up my mind a little while ago, based on how things were going, that would have to be something that would be really different than anything that I had heard of or was brought up to me that would make me want to change where we are right now." And I think, like, Brooks, even for you and I, especially with the lineup that's being put out on the ice, it's kind of tough to believe, right? Like, you're like, okay, well, surely, they're not going to be able to overcome this challenge or, be able to win that game. And then they beat Dallas. And then, yes, I know it was with a backup goalie, but they beat the Tampa Bay Lightning. They put 7 goals up on them. And like you said, they had won 13 out of 16 going into that loss against the Carolina Hurricanes. And I'll credit Bally Sports South for putting this graphic up 2 games ago. But so mid-March was when this impressive run really began. And the underlying statistics and then even some of the, other like top statistics are really impressive. I mean, really impressive. When I saw the graphic, I audibly said, I was like, wow. So the Predators over this stretch were first in the NHL in goals against, so defensively. Their penalty kill was first as well. They, of course, were first in points and wins overall. And then a few other statistics that I won't bore you with on the radio. But, like, I mean, it makes sense. Like, you keep seeing the wins and you see the points, but, like, it's almost like it's kind of hard to comprehend just what the turnaround has been, and especially when you've seen just player after player continue to go down. And I think, Coach Hines really has his team in a spot right now where they believe in what he's telling them. They believe in learning the lessons, whether they win or that they lose. And really, I've even noticed it in just a couple small things, like even just breakout plays from the defensive zone. You'll see, like, a guy will skate as he's leaving, maybe, like, and you'll see a puck from behind the goal to the half wall out to the blue line. And, like, it almost looks like they're not going to be there in time, right? Like, that you're just going through the motions, and then, bam, the puck will hit them and hit them again. And, like, I feel like earlier on in the season, it felt like the Predators, like, could even complete passes at points, right? Like, when it was, when they were going through some of their tougher stretches. So I really feel like even the smaller, less important parts of the system are really gelling right now, and they are just so hard to play against, which is something that we heard 100 times this offseason. You mentioned Janot, who we'll speak to in our next segment, but I mean, Trinan is laying waste. Sissons is laying waste. Like, I personally, normally when I would construct 4 forward lines, I, want as much skill and talent as I can, right? Like, so it's hard for me to sometimes buy into the narrative of, like, a fourth line with its physicality can set the tone and kind of, put everybody else in order with the game plan you want to put together. The Herd line, or whatever it's called now, Herd line plus Tanner Chanot, I mean, it's doing that night in and night out, and it's especially doing it against Dallas, an equally large and physical team, and predominantly the team that you're competing for this final playoff spot.
I think one thing that Poile mentioned that stuck out to me, and he kind of alluded to it, but he said it's kind of a reward for the fans to not trade anyone away, but I think more importantly for the players in that locker room, like, what kind of message would that have sent if this team would have scratched and clawed their way back into a playoff position over the last month? And then Poile still went out and traded a few guys that might have helped play a large role in getting to that point in the standings. And I think that really goes a long way in your locker room too. And you know, as he said so many times, just the belief that is around the organization right now, the belief in that room. And I think this was, again, and we've talked about it on the show before, I think this is kind of what management and coaches hoped that this team would be. Mm-hmm. And it just took them so long to get going. But I think that is a bit of a reward to not deal anyone away off of your active roster and allow these guys to stay together and to continue to build on what they've been able to do already this season. Because it is remarkable. I mean, the amount of players that are out of the lineup due to injury, whether or not the Predators make the playoffs, it still is quite a story that they've even been able to come this far and get to where they are, considering the circumstances. And I think it's worth mentioning too, and I've got this quote here as well, from David Poile, that Thomas, he's a realist, and he was like, hey, I'm not talking Stanley Cup right now.
I think there are a few positions in the world that hindsight is not more readily available than general managers or coaches in sports, right? I mean, when something doesn't happen or does happen, it's so easy to say in retrospect, X, Y, or Z. And I think, as you mentioned, Poile very clearly knows that at the end of the season, that's when the story will be written, dependent on if the Predators make the playoffs and then what they do within those, you know, that postseason. That's when it'll be determined, yes, he did the right move. No, he didn't do, you know, the right move or something right there. But that's not the luxury that he has. I think he's looked at the evidence over the last 6 weeks and he made a decision. And I think it's one that he feels certainly far better that in and more confident in than he did in the past. And he went on to say, you know, again, not talking about a Stanley Cup right now, not there per se. He said, you know, we could make the playoffs. That may happen, that may not. But he said, so all I know is that we've made a lot of changes with our club, a lot of things that are going the right direction. A lot of younger players are going to be in there, and how I felt to begin this season, or probably more realistically a month into the season, versus how I feel today is like night and day. It's much better, much more confident about the future, much more clarity about where we are with our team. So yeah, the stretch run is here. We've got 12 games remaining. Now three of them will be against the Blackhawks coming up next week, one more against the Stars on May the 1st. That may go down as the game of the regular season. But Predators are right there, and we've been saying it for months, not certain that they would be in this position, but they have been, thanks to Juuse Saros, thanks to so many rookies, thanks to, you know, the team play that is actually producing offense. I think that's something we've heard preached for years for the Predators and haven't necessarily seen it, right? Like, they've played too much of a skill game, or we'll see, oh, you know, the first or second line didn't deliver tonight, and that's what we lost. They truly are generating offensive chances because of how they're playing as a team and systematically. So one of those players that's helped spearhead that, only four games into his NHL career, he got his first NHL goal in the big win over the Tampa Bay Lightning. He's got several more hits than that. I'm referring to Predators forward Tanner Janot. He'll speak with Brooks Bratton coming up on the Preds Official Podcast, presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hi, I'm Matt Duchesne, and most of you know I'm a husband, father, proud Nashville Predator, and a huge music fan. But what you might not know is that I'm also a total Ford guy, and my dealership is Two Rivers Ford. I chose Two Rivers because they're honest, upfront, and easy to do business with. They also have non-commissioned salespeople, which is great. I figured when a local business has been around for almost four decades, they must be doing something right, eh? So if you're ready for a new Ford, definitely go see my friends at Two Rivers Ford.
Welcome back to the Predators official podcast here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by Two Rivers Ford. Brooks Bratton here in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena. And as we record this on Wednesday, April 14th, we are only 12 hours removed from Tanner Janot scoring his first career NHL goal. Tanner, before we get to a whole slew of other topics, has your phone slowed down? Have you even checked it from last night and getting your first?
Last night I didn't get to too many of the texts and Snapchats and stuff. I talked to my family and that's about it. I kind of wanted to just enjoy the night with my girlfriend, and this morning I got to a few, so it's been really good to see everyone reaching out, and it's been really special for to just have everyone reach out and show their support and everything like that.
Do you have an idea as a number of calls, texts, that sort of thing, or has there been anyone that you've been maybe surprised or pleasantly surprised to see?
Yeah, just everyone that reaches out. It's always a good surprise and always good to hear from everybody. So for a number, I think I was around probably 100 texts last night. It was pretty crazy. So yeah, it was just a little overwhelming for last night, but this morning I got to it.
How has it been for you the last couple? And of course, you had your first in March. You go back down to Chicago, but you get a couple more here in Nashville for the time being. What have you thought just about being able to play at this level for these last couple? You've been a very physical player too. Everybody's taken note of that. But what has it been like for you to get a couple more here in Nashville so far?
Yeah, these past two games, I've felt really good and comfortable. Definitely more comfortable than my first one. It's really nice playing with Yaki and Sizz. They're pretty similar players, and we can benefit from each other from playing a physical style game and just getting in on the forecheck and bringing energy to the guys. So it's been really good. Just want to try and keep her going, keep getting better every game.
You've led the Preds in hits those last couple of games too. How much do you enjoy the physical side of the game? Because I remember when you first signed a few years ago, there was a video that kind of circulated from Junior of you laying out a guy, and you've done it a couple of times here at the NHL level already.
Yeah, it's always been a big part of my game. I'm a bigger guy, so I can mix it up that way a little bit. It's fun. You know, not too many guys like to do it. So I just... I like to have some fun with it, get in, like I said, create some space for my teammates, and it's fun. It's fun.
You mentioned it in that first one back in March, and you get that one under your belt, but only about 6 minutes of ice time, not a ton going on, but you go back down to Chicago, and you had already been doing well with the Wolves, but you continue to put up the points down there. What has it been like to have gotten that first one, go back down, get some more experience, and what has that done for your confidence to then be able to come back up as well?
Yeah, I think it really helped my confidence going down to Chicago. I was playing a lot of minutes, getting some more opportunity that I haven't had a lot of in the past in my professional career so far. So I just think it was really good to kind of round out my game and just prepare me for being up here in the NHL. And I've brought that confidence up here and try to just think that I belong here and keep playing my game that I was trying to play down in Chicago and just try to simulate those feelings that I was having there of success and do it here.
10 goals, 21 points in just 13 games with Chicago, and that was after starting the season in the ECHL with the Florida Everblades. So I guess in the span of 3 months, you've played in three different leagues. I mean, can you wrap your head around that?
It's just a crazy year, and anyone you ask will say that, just with all the changes with COVID and everything. So I'm just trying to take it day by day. Like, it's pretty crazy. Like, that doesn't probably happen very often, the three different leagues. But yeah, just taking it day by day, trying to get better every day. And obviously the goal is to be here and have success in the NHL. And the team's rolling right now, so it's lots of fun.
Oxbow, Saskatchewan is the hometown, and a quick Google search tells me no more than 1,500 people. Tell me about growing up on the Canadian prairies and what it's like to not only do that, but to play hockey as a kid there as well.
Yeah, I loved growing up in a small town. You just know everybody. You have the same classmates from kindergarten all the way to graduation. So you make some really good friends that way. For hockey, I started out in Oxbow, just playing at the rink there. And then as I kind of got older, I had to move out and play it in Estevan, Saskatchewan for a little bit of a higher level. And I can't thank my dad and my parents enough for putting in all those hours driving. And it's about an hour commute. So it's the sacrifices they had to make to help me get here was amazing. And I can't thank them enough.
How often did you make that commute?
We did a practice twice a week, and the weekends we were traveling all over the province, so it was a lot of hours in the vehicle.
Yeah. What were those times like? Good bonding memories there?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm never gonna forget those times when it was just me and my dad in the car, and just after games talking about hockey, and most of the time I'd be sleeping probably, but I can't thank him enough for putting in all those hours and on top of work too. So both my parents are really amazing, and my brother even too, so can't thank them enough.
You go through your minor hockey days and eventually you get to the WHL, the Moose Jaw Warriors. You're never drafted by an NHL team, but you did pretty well for yourself in Moose Jaw. Was there a moment that you thought that maybe there's something more to this? Maybe I'm not just going to stop playing in the WHL here and there could be something there?
For a moment, I guess, the first time I went to an NHL development camp, it was in Minnesota when I was 18. So that was a pretty cool experience and something that maybe sparked me and thought that maybe I could make the next level. And then I just kept getting better in the WHL. I had a great team, great teammates, good coaches, and just tried every day to get better. And the next year, I think I went to Washington. And then the year after that was my overage year, and we had an amazing team. Finished first in the regular season and ended up signing my contract here with Nashville. So, I guess my whole career, I've just been trying to take it day by day and trying to get better every day.
What was that moment like to sign that deal with Nashville? We're just actually, it's just over 3 years removed from you signing in April of 2018. But what do you remember about that? And what was that moment of your life like to say, okay, like here's the deal with an NHL hockey club?
It was a dream come true. Obviously, every hockey player dreams of signing an NHL contract. So it was just super special. I think we were in the playoffs at the time, and the two other 20-year-olds on the team had signed NHL contracts. So that, and then me signing mine just made it extra special. All three of the overagers signed a NHL contract. So it was just amazing. Got me looking forward to a future in hockey, and sparked me even more to keep trying to get better.
Predators forward Tanner Janot is our guest here on the Preds Official Podcast, presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tanner, you mentioned it at the top, but scoring your first NHL goal, kind of wanted to chill, take the night with your girlfriend, not too much going on. I'm kind of wondering the story, if there is a backstory to meeting. Alex Carrier shared a few weeks ago that he got rejected twice by his girlfriend before she finally said yes. Do you have anything as dramatic as that?
Not as dramatic as that, I don't think. But how we met is we were both lifeguards, and I got a job at the pool that she was working at as well. And we just kind of ran into each other one time and kind of hit it off a little bit, and just kind of had those little awkward try to get to spend more time with each other, and it just kind of grew from there, and we've been together over 3 years now, so it's been awesome.
I remember talking to Michael McCarron, and he was just saying, as someone who you move around from time to time, and just the support, that support system, I don't think a lot of people necessarily think about. How big of a support is she for you?
Oh, definitely a huge support. I was just telling her last night that I was so happy that she could be here. Being with COVID and everything, it just made it so much more special to be able to share it with her. My parents couldn't make it down for this game or my first game, but just having her here makes it 100 times better. And just being able to share it with someone, it's really awesome.
What did she think of you getting a goal? Did she say anything?
Oh, yeah. She said her phone was blowing up too, and she was talking to all our family, and it was, she said she just couldn't stop shaking. We were just both so excited and so happy.
I noticed that you also have a dog in your life. We love hearing about the dog, so tell us about your pup.
Yeah, she's a Husky Pyrenees cross. She's about 3 years old. She's real big. She's got a lot of hair. She needs a lot of haircuts just to keep it so we don't have to vacuum every day in the house. She's awesome. She's really good. We love taking her. It's good to have her here because it gets us out for walks and keeps us active in the sun and everything. So yeah, she's awesome.
Awesome. Have you always been a dog guy?
This is my first dog I've had, but I've always loved dogs. Okay. Yeah.
Nice. Well, something else that we like to touch on, especially in these times, you've got certainly some free time, especially on the road. You can't really go anywhere, go to dinner, anything like that. So are there things that you do to occupy your free time? Any streaming, TVs, movies, anything like that?
Yeah, like I said, we just like to go for walks with the dog. My girlfriend's doing some school online classes right now, so I've been trying to help her out with that and just trying to keep busy, cooking some new meals, just try some new things at home. So it's tough with things being what they are, but you just kind of got to make the most of every day and have some fun.
All right, I'm big into the food. So what are you cooking? What do you like? Has there been something that you're like, dang, this is good? And has there been something that you're like, maybe never again?
Well, we had a baking mishap. We just forgot some ingredients, and they turned out all right. It wasn't too bad. But she tried this new stir fry. A sauce she made was just amazing. So that's probably been my favorite thing that we've made so far.
Gotcha. Good deal. What anything else that you've learned? I know some guys have picked up new hobbies during all of this, or is there anything maybe that you've just reconnected on, anything like that?
I don't think so. Just getting to spend more time with the dog and more, more doing a little bit of classes myself for trying to work towards a degree and stuff. So I didn't get to go to college like some guys, but so just kind of trying to better myself in other ways other than being at the rink too. So
that's awesome. What are you working on? What are you interested in?
Right now I'm in a certificate of finance course through the University of Athabasca. So I've been taking some like economics classes and finance and things like that. So that stuff kind of interests me.
Very nice. So that's kind of a good balance, I guess, because I know a lot of guys, you try to have something maybe to take your mind off of things away from the rink. Is that kind of a balance in a way for you?
Yeah, for sure. It's really good just to, if, you know, maybe you have a bad day at the rink and you don't want to be thinking about it all day, it just kind of gets your mind off it and gives you something else to focus on and something that you can be doing good at. So it's really good, and also the dog helps with that a lot too.
Awesome to have a lot of things going on, but of course hockey is number one, at least as far as a professional career for you right now. When you look back to when you signed that first deal 3 years ago to how far you've come now, what do you think about how you've grown, not only on the ice as a player but off the ice as a person as well?
It's been a heck of a journey. It's definitely been an awesome 3 years, starting out down in Milwaukee. Had some great coaching down there, and it's been really good ever since the start. My first year I had an injury, so had to work through that a little bit. So I've been through, feels like, a lot already in my professional career, and all those things added up, it just, like you said, it helps build you as not only a hockey player but as a person as well. And I'm really grateful for all the opportunities that I've been getting, and I just want to keep working every day to become a better hockey player and a better person as well.
And now that you're here, you've had this taste of NHL action. What is next for you, and how do you view your situation? I know maybe not look too far ahead into the future, but how do you view the situation that you're in right now, and how do you approach it day by day?
Just keep going. Like I said, every day I just try to do something to make myself better as a hockey player and a person. So take it day by day, with this year being what it is. Keep going, keep trying to help the team win. And hopefully we can do something special here.
All the way from Oxbow to Nashville. Tanner, thanks for this. It's good to see you up here, but best of luck the rest of the way. And we'll do this again sometime soon, hopefully.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Up next, how are Preds broadcasters calling games away from home this season, and a couple of signings to tell you about. This is the Predators official podcast presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Official podcast presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game, back alongside for segment three of the program. Brooks with our conversation with rookie forward Tanner Jeannot, lighting it up in the American Hockey League level. And Brooks, I'd say, can you call him a fan favorite after only four NHL games? That may be a little premature, but what he did against the Dallas Stars single-handedly, I don't know, it piqued my interest. I'll say that at least.
That's you start throwing around 6'7" Jamie Oleksiak. That's a pretty good way to become a fan favorite. Oxbow, Saskatchewan, too.
There you go.
Just a sweet hometown. Fits in perfectly for the Herd. He's from Oxbow. He's instantly the Ox.
There you go. I mean, I think I texted you in that game. I was like, I think Tanner Janot just delivered my favorite moment of the season, ? So, yeah, that was something. That's an offensive forecheck for sure.
He's a good kid, too. I mean, he's just a great story. Again, never drafted, but, you know, really scratched and clawed and worked his way up to this point. And you love stories like that. They're easy players to root for, and especially when they're good people, too. And he's a great kid. So good to have him here.
Yeah, the Biloxi Bull down probably for several more weeks as well with his injury, and yet the Herd continues to thunder on with the acquisition or the addition of Tanner Janot. So you wrote a story that's on nationalpredators.com if people want to check it out further, and they can see some photos as well. But we talked to Predators broadcaster Willie Donig about this a month or so ago, just very briefly. But for those that don't know, and I think most do, because of the pandemic, because of restrictions, all of the Predators broadcasts, every single one, are occurring in Bridgestone Arena. So that, of course, includes road games. And you went up there just to see that specific setup, which is pretty interesting as well with radio and TV side by side, as they've really had to adjust something that started in the return to play when the Preds were in the Edmonton bubble and then has continued this entire year for the 2021 season.
Well, so as our loyal listeners know, I was actually out of our bubble for a few weeks. And I'm like, how can I make myself useful and actually do something that I couldn't normally do in the bubble? So yeah, I decided to go to Bridgestone Arena for an away game and see what the setup is like. Willie Donig, Chris Mason on the TV side, Pete Weber, and Hal Gill on the radio side. They are still in their normal broadcast perches inside Bridgestone Arena, and they're just simply calling the game off of a bunch of monitors, TV screens that are showing the game feed that's coming from the TV truck, which is still parked down in the Bridgestone Arena loading dock. And normally you'd be taking that show on the road, and instead they're staying home. I think the coolest thing for me was being, and again, I mean, just to set the scene for you, it is an empty Bridgestone Arena except for the broadcasters calling the game. So you can imagine Willie and Pete's voices kind of battling it out and echoing through an empty arena. It was honestly quite fascinating. And just to stand there and have Pete to my right, Willie to my left, and to hear their calls kind of back and forth with each other. They can't hear each other because of the headphones, thankfully, that they're wearing. But to be a bystander there and to hear their calls go back and forth, that was really cool. And I actually tweeted a clip of it. If you haven't seen it, but it's in the story as well. But I think that was the coolest part, not only to see just how they've been able to adapt and call games hundreds of miles away and do so in an empty arena, but just to be there and to hear them in an empty building, it was really something. So yeah, cool little story, and it's really quite impressive what they've been able to do away from home.
Well, thank you for adding that. I almost said that the video was included in the post, and then I doubted myself, and so I settled for just photos. But yes, video evidence of this as well. You also spoke with Predators color analyst Chris Mason, who, of course, we've had on the show several times as well. And he was detailing how, especially on road games, he says, I have to stand to try and keep the energy. And I think one of the things that the story reveals is, so the show is essentially cut by the home broadcast. So that production crew is deciding, because they're physically there, what camera angles are largely going to be taken. And then that impacts the Predators broadcasting side as well, especially on TV, because then they are listening to, oh, they're going to show this replay, or they're going to cut to this. That's going to then impact my feed. Like, I don't have the normal control that I would to say, okay, take that camera, you know, showing the goal, take that camera showing the bench. You know, they're at, you know, the mercy of what's happening in that home arena. And then therefore that, of course, is affecting the broadcasters as well, who are watching on a monitor and may not be able to see, you know, what's happening on the trailing play. So Mason was saying that he tries to stand to make sure he keeps the energy level out, because, like you said, it can feel so quiet and so dead as the only people there inside the arena. He was joking, saying, unfortunately, and I remember this because Willie Donig tweeted about it, and you can barely hear it I believe it was a game up in Chicago that Rocco Grimaldi scores, and Mace apparently was just so surprised and excited by it that he kicks his large barstool chair over. And you can hear it clang a little bit in the clip, but predominantly what you can hear is Willie just like, for some reason, you not knowing the context, you're like, why is he just laughing through this goal call a little bit? And it's because he's trying to, you know, not lose it because Mace has just kicked over his chair. So, again, I we said this to him a month ago. I think certainly the hope is that the games and the calling of the action will go back to normal, you know, very soon for these games, you know, being able for broadcasters to be in each of the arenas. But truly is impressive what they've been able to accomplish. Something that didn't seem possible 10 years ago, right? Oh, well, what? Like, you can't call a game off a monitor that, you know, everyone would know. It'd be terrible. It wouldn't work at all. And Willie said that his biggest compliment, and I say this to people, like, sometimes you don't even think about it. You don't even think, oh, they're not there. They're not at the game. Like, they're not able to be there. I think that speaks very highly of what they've been able to accomplish. So, yeah, I mean, you may be interested to see more about that. Like we said, NashBros.com is the place to go for that. Again, probably only this season, or hopefully only this season, that's the setup. So you can see a little bit more about it there. And then in closing, the Predators had two signings, one of them very dear to your heart this week.
Well, I really actually enjoy talking to both of these guys, but yes, you're right. So the first one comes for defenseman Josh Healy, a one-year, two-way deal just for the remainder of this season. So he's actually been playing with the Chicago Wolves in the American Hockey League, but he was not signed by the Predators. So if they needed another defenseman, which goodness knows anything can happen, we've used 20 defensemen already this season, it feels like, and just to have Healy there, one more guy, if you need them, you can call him up now. So congrats to Josh on getting that deal. And then earlier today, as we record this on Thursday night, the Predators signed goaltender Tomáš Vomáčka to a two-year entry-level contract. The Preds drafted him in 2017, and he finished his junior season at the University of Connecticut, the goaltender for UConn. He started every single game for UConn this season, was named a Hockey East All-Star third team member, and was also on the watch list for the Mike Richter Award, which goes annually to the top goaltender in Division One. Congrats to Tomáš, and he's an unreal personality. I've loved getting to know him over the years and talking to him every time he's in Nashville. So a great kid with a bright future. So really happy to see him get that contract signed.
You may recall Jakub Kondalik as well. He was a 2018 draft pick. He is teammates with Tomáš there at UConn. So he is 6'6", 226. I think you may remember him from some dev camps, just a towering figure. So cool that two Preds prospects are playing together. And I think this is worth mentioning. I'd say it's pretty infrequent that a deal happens like Healy does. Normally at this time of year, when you're seeing that contract signed, it's for the following season. I think we honestly correct listeners and fans on that a lot to say, like, oh no, like, this is for the upcoming year. You know, they're not going to be just joining the Predators all of a sudden. This is actually the opposite of it, because he was on the AHL contract. Now the Predators have the opportunity, if he, you know, needs to be on the taxi squad or a black ace or even just at the NHL level, that's why they signed him to that contract. So yeah, a little different than we, you know, see that often. And two guys that have been around for several years already, and, you know, maybe they'll now have the opportunity to stick around a little bit longer. So we're going to stick around a little bit longer as well here on the POP. You can't get rid of us that easy. We got some good Twitter questions this week that we want to spend some more time on than normal. So we'll answer those next on the Preds Official Podcast, presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Official podcast presented by Two Rivers Ford on ESPN 102.5 The Game, concluding our After Dark late night edition of the show. Again, if you're listening on the radio, you're like, I think it's daytime. Looks like it's 8:45 a.m. to me. You'd be right. You're not crazy. If you're listening on the podcast, I can't speak to that, which we're delivering on-demand content. We're trying. But if you didn't catch the beginning of the show, we are recording this after the Predators and Hurricanes game on Thursday. We believe, we've checked the franchise record book, our latest recording of the POP. I guess, Brooks, you're only a few minutes away from hitting Friday there on the Eastern time zone. I'm not too far off in the Central myself. So if we sound a little bit tired, if we didn't feel as sharp, We see it. We recognize it. Max is just going to have to spend even more time in the edit bay to make us sound a little bit better. But, you know, we're trying. We're trying to deliver you a good show.
1 minute to midnight. No, I'm just
one
I'm just
minute to go.
Classic Christmas tune. I'm just glad that no hotel staff have come to knock on my door to tell me to keep it down yet. So that's a victory in itself.
Sure. Now, if we'd gone with producer Max's musical suggestion of Pump It Up, I'm pretty sure they'd be knocking on your door right now because you would be so pumped up. But we didn't. We've already played that on a recent show, so we resisted. We resisted. Anyways, so some news, some big news, and it's going to affect Nashville, Bridgestone Arena, and the Predators quite rapidly. So Nashville Metro Public Health Department announced on Thursday that the capacity will be increasing inside of Bridgestone Arena. So normally at 17,159, of course, they are going to go up from about 25% to 33%, which will be just shy of 5,700 fans. So a pretty substantial number there. Certainly worth mentioning that that occurred because of the Smashville Safe policies, because of wearing masks, because of social distancing and all of that. It's gone so well that as our cases are going down, of course, as well for COVID, more people are being vaccinated, that we're going to go up to 33%. So if you haven't come out to a game yet, check out single game tickets. That takes place for Monday's game against the Blackhawks. So the next home game. So it'll be very soon. NashvilleBros.com/tickets is the place to go and check that out. And then we'll see. Certainly a good sign. The playoffs are right around the corner. Are we able to increase even more? And I keep saying our because, you know, this speaks to all in-house venues and arenas. So it's not just Bridgestone Arena, but outdoor, it's even more. Actually, the capacity is even larger. So good. I think it means keep your nose to the grindstone. Things are getting better, you know, thank goodness. And so, yeah, it's going to affect Bridgestone Arena very quickly. So come out to a game if you haven't yet.
Let's get to these questions. We got a couple of questions on the lineup, actually, and it's certainly worth mentioning as we get later and later in this regular season. And there are still plenty of players out of the lineup, but players are going to start getting healthy. They're going to start coming back soon. And Nicholas asked, if everyone is healthy, what is the Preds' ideal lineup? So many young guys have proved their worth this year. And I know, Thomas, that you've come up with what you think might be your ideal lineup if everyone is healthy. But I did want to mention first, and head coach John Hines was asked about it on Thursday morning, kind of along the same lines, you know, players are going to get healthy eventually. How do you approach that? How do you deal with that when you've got all these players who have made such an impact? And then you've got these guys who are injured, ready to come back. And he used the example of course, associate captain Ryan Ellis recently came back. And Ellis came in with the mindset, I'm going to do whatever I need to do to help the team win. For example, Ellis was not on the power play immediately upon returning. Normally he would be, but the power play was clicking, doing really well. They had two units they liked, and so Ellis did not immediately go back onto the power play unit. But something that Hines mentioned, again, with guys who are going to be coming back soon enough, was you've got to come in with the mindset of, you know, what can I do to help the Nashville Predators, not what can this team do for me? Kind of to borrow from the famous JFK speech, ask not what you can do for your country. Ask not what the Nashville Predators can do for you. Ask what you can do to help them win. But I think it makes a lot of sense. You're going to need guys mm-hmm. who are willing to do whatever it takes. And if that means taking a step back, maybe you're scratched a game, maybe you don't get as much ice time, whatever the case is, there's going to be some difficult decisions to make. And that's not a bad thing because so many guys deserve those spots. But it will be fascinating to see what that ideal lineup is. So Thomas, what is your ideal lineup?
I thought you were going to launch in to start saying decade and we're going to get a man on the moon before the decade's out. I would love to hear that speech as well while you're at it. So I think to add to those comments from Coach Hines, he said something that was so realistic and so likely true that I was like, oh. And that was this. He was, you know, asking, are you planning for that? Are you thinking about that? And I think his heavy implication was, by the time some of these guys come back, somebody else will be hurt. So, like, I'm not going to sit here and wonder, okay, who's going to be on the second pairing if everyone's healthy? Because I hate to say it, but we're kind of not in that situation. I mean, such a compact schedule, players getting hurt so often that I was like, oh, single tier. Like, I mean, he's totally right. Like, you can't worry about hypotheticals all the time because who knows? In 2 weeks, your list of players probably won't be the same.
Honestly, on Thursday in Carolina, they showed a full screen graphic of all of our injuries on the scoreboard, and I kind of laughed to myself because it's still insane. You know it, but to see it written out like that, it's crazy.
Yeah, so General Manager David Poyle said it earlier in the week as well. He said, we have 34 players in Nashville right now, and it's a battle every night to get 20 players that can play. Like, so even the 20 that are in, don't assume they're fully healthy either. I mean, so 14 and 20, almost half the people that are here aren't even able to suit up. So yes, maybe I'm answering a hypothetical in the sense that we'll never be able to get to this point, but it does seem like Matt Duchene is probably the closest that he is getting there. We've heard a few updates. Poyle said, you know, he maybe spoke too soon, saying he'd be available this week. Maybe it's, you know, a week or two out from there, but he is skating. He is getting closer. Maybe Philip Forsberg is the next one up, but we'll see. And there certainly are some longer term things. Off the top of my head, if I recall correctly, I think Alex Carrier was a 3 to 5 week was the initial timeline, which we're already, you know, getting to that pretty quickly as well. But here's the lineup without wasting too much time. And I will only denote the couple that, you know, could be changed or I would change, you know, first, where I'd be like, okay, yeah, maybe you could convince me otherwise. I put Jofa back together. I went Forsberg and Johansson. I think you could make the argument that Tolvanen could be up there on the right wing instead of Victor Arvidsson. Really liked what Yarncroke and Granlund have done this year. So my second line, I went Yarncroke, Granlund, and Tolvanen. On the third line, I went Grimaldi, Duchene, and Cunnan. I think Duchene is the biggest wild card there. Where exactly he fits, he could be higher up in the lineup if you want him on the wing. I just don't know that he's been as comfortable or as successful with that. With the fourth line, and I know this will break some hearts, I scratched the entire third line, at least in this lineup, and went Cousins, Holla, and Sissons. Well, I guess Sissons, you know, one of the three members of the third line on your fourth line. Defense is also the tricky one. Feel pretty good about the top four of Yossi Ellis, Ekholm, Carrier. I think he's a prime example. We had talked about that. You know, would Carrier still have a spot when everyone was healthy? And we quickly learned, well, no one's ever, we never get a fully healthy lineup. And then I put Fabro in the third pairing, and then my left D on that pairing is the one's the biggest wild card. So I think Matt Benning has impressed me the most over the last 6 weeks on from the blue line. I've been very impressed with what he's delivered, but he shoots right. So I really don't, you know, want two right shooting defensemen in Benning and Fabro. So I could certainly be convinced maybe a Mark Borowiecki comes in there to be the left D. But yeah, it's crazy to think if everyone were to get healthy, you're like, well, we have 14 defensemen to choose from. It's like, well, yeah, because of how the season's gone. So you're not normally used to making that decision. It's normally, you know, 7 defensemen or even 8 defensemen at most that you're choosing from. You're like, okay, great. Those 2 guys won't play. These 6 will. But it's tough when you're like, okay, wait. So like Davies wouldn't play and Harper wouldn't play and Gabranson wouldn't play. And then, you know, we've talked about some of these rookies as well. It's like, yeah, like I certainly could make the argument for Duchene over Pitlick, for example. But then you're like, man, Trinan, really? Olivier? Janot? Like, so who knows? And I think ideally, to conclude, you could get into a situation that you've seen with Laviolette in years past, especially the 17-18 season, where you're truly playing different lineups based on the opponent. You're playing the Dallas Stars? Mm-hmm. Yeah, the herd line's probably in there. You know, you're playing more of a skill game and you think that's the better way to go? Maybe you are putting you know, someone like Holla on the fourth line or, a little more speed, a little more, you know, skill in that matter, a Grimaldi in a different spot, for example. So that was a long-winded question or answer to a question, but we thought it was a good one. Thought we'd touch on it. Finally, Nick wants to know, will you guys be attending any Nashville SC games? For those that don't know, that is Nashville's MLS team. Will you be going to any games this year?
I would like to. Yeah. I like trying new things. Can't do anything right now in the bubble, but
sure. Yeah, I want to check them out as well. I was saying to producer Max before we started recording, very excited for the new stadium, which is next year. I think I definitely will want to check that out in 2022 for sure. As we know, I'm more of a Premier League guy than an MLS guy. Go Leicester City Foxes, but you know, I'll give Nashville SC a chance. All right, any closing thoughts as we go?
Well, I was going to say, I will say too, as someone who works for a professional sports team, I love going to other games and not having to work.
It's almost a relief. I know, thank goodness. But then you are there and you're like, oh, interesting. They did that. We could do that. Or, oh, wow, I wonder why they did that. Yeah, no. Oh, great giveaway. Yeah, you say that, and then you end up working the whole time anyways. But for Brooks Braddon, follow him at Brooks Braddon on Twitter, at Brooks.Braddon on Instagram. I am at Tom A. Willis on Twitter. Thanks to producer Max for bringing up the music on this 128th episode of the show. Thanks to Tanner Janot, the Predators forward, for joining us this week on the POP. If you want to subscribe, nashpress.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcast is the easy place to go to stay in tune with the Preds and the POP in the weeks to come. Brooks, thanks for tuning in for this late night, midnight edition. We just crossed the midnight hour into Friday. Happy Friday as we record on this edition of the show. Come on home soon enough.
Nighty night. Sleep tight.